Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 73 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. And I've got news. You might have guessed with the sporadic nature of this podcast over this last year, but I'm afraid that number 73 is going to be my last one ever. Yes, after 6 years and 73 episodes, the Lesbian Book Club is finally drawing to a close. And I'm going to be sad to let go of this podcast. I really am. But never fear. All the episodes will stay up in this feed, as will all the other shows on this feed, including the new Rainbow Remix podcast. But if you missed the Lesbian Book Club, you can come back and listen to any episode of the 73 I've recorded whenever you want to. And let's face it, I bet you've forgotten all the ones from the beginning. I know I have. And maybe you've only joined us halfway through and you haven't yet gone back and listened to the others. So do, I urge you. And then you can hear me, 5 years younger, 5 years more, less wise, more naive, fresh and hopeful in a world where COVID didn't exist. Imagine that. Yeah, but I've had some fantastic guests on the podcast throughout my time behind the podcast mic. And I've learned so much along the way, actually, as well as hopefully entertaining you. And what I didn't expect when I started this podcast was to make friends through it. But that's exactly what happened. I met lesbian authors that I bonded with, and now I call some of them my true friends. And people like T.B. Markinson and Harper Bliss. We met through this podcast. We've written books together. We've been away on a holiday together. And I even host my other podcast, Lesbians Who Write, with T.B. Markinson. And we met after she emailed me about this podcast. And I invited her on to be a guest. And the rest is history. But it's been an absolute pleasure hosting it over the last 6 years. And I hope you've enjoyed the journey with me from podcast noob to, well, I don't know if I'm a professional, but you know, somewhat a bit improved. But I'm not just going to wrap up the last podcast in a hurry. Don't be silly. We're going to have a full-on last podcast fest. So we're going to have a rundown of the US and UK Amazon lesbian fiction charts as usual. Then I'm going to fill you in on the must-read lesbian fiction, old and new for festive times. And then I'm going to sort of interview myself and then I'm gonna add on the first chapter of my brand new audiobook Big London Dreams, so you can have a listen and see if you like it. So shall we get into it, the final ever episodes of the Lesbian Book Club? Let's do it. First up, the Amazon charts, and topping the charts as I record this in the US on December the 14th is Rachel Lacey with her book Read Between the Lines. Now, this is a modern sapphic retelling of You've Got Mail, with our heroine bookstore owner Rosie falling in love with her favourite author Bree, who by day is trying to develop her bookstore premises and put her out of business. Oh my god! Cue stumbling, falling, revelations, and a cute dog, Ovs. Kudos, though, to Rachel for getting this lesbian romance. It's not her first. She's had a slew of other lesbian romances published, but she'd done them herself. But she got Amazon Publishing interested in doing this one. So it's published by Montlake, and it has skittled everyone else to number one around the globe with Amazon's marketing power behind it. But it's amazing. She's a great writer. It's a great book. But also, more importantly, it's a big stride forward for not only Rachel, but lesbian fiction and lesbian romance. And I'm really excited about that, you know. I mean, when I started this podcast 6 years ago, lesbian fiction wasn't even being entertained by mainstream publishers. You know, nobody would take it. And now everybody's falling over themselves to get some lesbian romance and lesbian fiction onto their roster. So well done for Rachel for being the first one to break through the Amazon publishing ranks and get to like the top 100, into the top 100. I think maybe she even got the top 50 in the US, which is incredible. Also in the top five is the US author Hayley Cass with her book In the Long Run. Now, close followers of the lesfic charts will know that Hayley was a breakout star in the lesfic indie community in the past 18 months, and this book carries that one on. It's a second chance small town romance, my sweet spot, and there's an awful lot of it about right now, with a touch of enemies to lovers, if I'm picking up the correct blurb hints. Readers are loving it, and why wouldn't they? Because Hayley on only her third book, maybe her fourth, has established herself as a reader favourite. Also doing well in the Amazon charts is Anna Stone with her new book, Guarded Desires. Now, this one is about bodyguard Carmen. Do you know what? I still think of Carmen from The L Word every time I hear the name Carmen. And how could Shane do it? How could you leave Carmen at the altar? Oh my God! It's one of life's great mysteries. Anyway, back to Anna Stone's book. You got bodyguard Carmen and the heiress she's charged with guarding, a woman called Amber. Charged is the right word for this one, you get me? There's craving, there's surrendering, and there's a whole lot of back on show on the cover. It's at number two in the US, so I think it's got legs. Also smashing it at the end of 2021 is Monica McCallan. Now, Monica has been releasing books at a steady pace for a few years. Like Hayley Cass, she's been on this podcast and was and is a delight. She's very funny on Twitter. Go and follow her over there if you like. Very funny tweets and lots of pictures of her dogs, basically. But anyway, Monica's been releasing books at a steady pace for a few years now. But Back in Your Arms, her latest absolute breakout hit is an absolute stunner, well-deserved breakout hit. I loved it. Can you hear in my voice how much I loved it? Loved it. It's a second chance romance, second chance small town romance, and the characters are delicious, and I love their jobs. One of the men's like old pinball machines. Oh, it's beautiful. And by the end, I wanted to move to wherever the hell the small town was, and I wanted to go bowling, and I fucking hate bowling, so I don't know. What can I say? Also, Monica has a spin-off book in the charts called Cuffing Season, which is not about bondage, but it does contain cuffs. I'm not taking any more questions at this time. In the UK charts, Sarah Waters Fingersmith is making a welcome return to the top five because she's Radio 2's book club pick at the moment. So well done to Sarah. I'm sure we all know about Sarah by now, don't we? But Fingersmith, historical romance, I think. I don't know. I think there's some corsets in it. Also up there is Last Night at the Telegraph Club by Malinda Lowe. Now, I just read this one. It's my very latest book I've just finished, and I loved it again. Oh, yes, really did. And it's not a small town second chance romance. So that is an anomaly in all the books I'm featuring this week. This one, Last Night at the Telegraph Club, is set in the 1950s, and it's the story of one Chinese-American girl's sexual awakening at the Telegraph Club, where male impersonators come and do singing to ladies. There's some gorgeous writing here, and obviously being set in the 1950s, there's some longing, there's some heartbreak, but there is a happy ending. It's richly written and a real treat any time of year. Finally, Change of Heart by me is still top five in the UK and top 10 in the US almost 2 months after it was released. So I just want to say, as it's my last podcast, a heartfelt thanks to everybody who supported me throughout my career, but especially with this book as well. Thank you if you bought it, read it, and especially if you've reviewed it. Everyone makes a difference. It tells other readers to take a chance on me, and you made my day. And I know you shouldn't read reviews, but I do. All right, and so that's the chart roundup for December 2021. Now, because it's Christmas, I thought I'd add in a few festive recommendations for you. So if you're sitting there, you want a lovely Christmas or holiday type read, there are a load to choose from. But here's a few that I picked out. So Silent Night by Lily Seabrook is, wait for it, a small town second chance romance. Again, a lot of it about between a country singer and her childhood best friend. I think that Christmas is not actually cuffing season, as Monica McCallan would say, but second chance romance season. Because guess what next? Bryce Oakley has two shorter books out, but books nevertheless. The first is called Baking Spirits Bright, and it's a romance between a star baker and a food critic. I like the sound of that one. It's like, you know, if one of the Bake Off contestants fell in love with Prue Leith. I mean, that would be an age gap romance, wouldn't it? Apart from if it was that Mary woman who was 10 years younger than her. But yeah. Or one of the blokes fell in love with Paul Hollywood. See, I don't do straight romance, just queer. So that's the first one. And then the second one from Bryce Oakley is Rebel Without a Clause. And wait for it, it's a second chance small town romance. And it sounds great. So, I mean, you know, it's got festive things on covers, and there's going to be Christmas. Also, there's, if you're still needing more festive romance, there's Hard Candy Christmas by Hildred Billings. And this is, wait for it, a small town romance between a small town sweet shop owner, oh, I love it, and a big city lawyer, love it more. The small town sweet shop owner has a daughter, and what does she want for Christmas? She wants Santa to bring her mum, a wife. I mean, that's what every five-year-old wants for Christmas, isn't it? A new mommy. So yeah, that one, it sounds delicious. There's also Carol Wyatt Silver Bells. And this one is a bit different. It's an age gap festive lesbian romance between a fan and an actress. So it hasn't got a lot of Christmas in the description, but there's, you know, silver bells and snow on the front cover and the woman is in a woolly hat. So definitely festive-ish. And finally, Lost Without a Clause by Kaya LaSalle is a little bit of a twist on the usual romance formula. This one involves Santa's daughter, who's in line to take over the empire, but she doesn't want it. So she runs off to a small town alert, and she falls in love with the local candle shop owner. But Santa's going to track her down with an ultimatum eventually. And she hasn't told the candle shop owner that, you know, she's due to inherit Santa world. So, that one sounds interesting. I like something a little bit different. There's a selection of new books on the market, but of course there are some classics of the genre out there. Some of my favourites include Georgia Beer's with her book Fresh Tracks. This is an ensemble piece about a group of friends who go away to a cabin in the woods. It's not a murder mystery, don't worry, no one dies. In that week between Christmas and New Year where you're just made of cheese, they go away to a cabin in the woods to be made of cheese and drink wine and have a lot of sex and fights, and it all ends fine. But, you know, there's drama. I really enjoyed that one. There's also Jay's Under a Falling Star, which is a fantastic, gorgeous romance between a boss and somebody who works for her, I think, if I remember correctly. It's been a few years since I read it, but I really, really loved it. I remember there's a scene in a hot tub where they're both naked. Strange how I remember that. And yeah, it's set at Christmas. Jerry Hill's Chasing a Bright Blue is gorgeous. And that is a fantastic romance where the sister of the bride or the groom, one of them, falls for the other sister of the bride or groom, whichever one is which. And it's wonderful. I mean, Jerry Hill writes great books, right? And this is, I think, one of her best. There's also, don't miss Jane Retzig, R-E-T-Z-I-G, The Retreat, for something a little different for your Christmas offering. It is a romance, but it starts off on Christmas Eve where an affair that somebody has been having for the past 8 years with her best friend, two women, she's married to a man. She's been having an affair with her best friend, who's for 8 years, and the best friend is also best friends with her husband. So it all comes out and all their worlds blow up, and it's not for the faint-hearted. It's not a second chance Christmas romance with a bakery, though. It is not. It's gritty, but I loved it. And if you want something a little sort of heartwarming this Christmas, there's also Jen Silver's Christmas at Winterbourne. I really liked that. That's about a load of women who just go to a big house for a Christmas celebration. And then I can't leave this Christmas roundup without mentioning my two Christmas books. All I Want for Christmas features a heroine called Tori, who all she wants for Christmas is a girlfriend. And so she goes out on a series of terrible dates before she realises the person that she should be with, she's known all along. Do you know what? I wrote that one 6 years ago. 6 years ago. So it's weird thinking back on books that you've written that long ago, because I was a very different person 6 years ago. Everybody is, right? I wouldn't write that book the same way now. So it's really interesting looking back on books. They're like a time capsule of what you thought and who you were then, because who you are comes out in your writing. Spoiler alert. My other book that I only wrote last year, so it's pretty much present version me, is Christmas in Mistletoe, and I loved writing that one. It's a small town romance, everyone, is set in the hamlet of Mistletoe, and one of the characters works on a Christmas tree farm and is a folk singer. It's got snow, it's got twinkly lights, mulled wine, and ladies falling in love in the snow. What's not to love about that? And also, don't forget my other Christmas novella, It Had to Be You, which is free if you go to my website and sign up for my mailing list. Just put your email address into the box at the top of the page, and I will send you a free Christmas book. I can't say fairer than that. Okay, so that is all the books. Now, if you love my book recommendations, you can keep up to date with what I'm reading by signing up to my mailing list, where I send out an update every 2 weeks asking questions, telling you what I've been reading and writing and all the books I've loved. Go and sign up for my mailing list on my website, and that's www.clairelydon.co.uk. Click on book recommendations for the latest that I have. For the final part of this final Lesbian Book Club podcast, I normally do an interview with an author, so I'm just going to answer the questions this time. I'm going to answer the questions that I've been asking my guests over the past 6 years. Here we go. Tell me a little bit about where you are and what you can see from where you're sitting. Well, I'm not at my normal desk today. I'm actually down in Leigh-on-Sea in Essex. I'm doing a bit of parental care. My mum and dad are quite old, so I've just come down here for a week to do a bit of care for them. So I'm actually staying at my brother's house. I'm sitting in his lounge, and it's quite big, spacious. There's a nice radiator blowing out lots of heat. There's double doors at the end of the room leading out to a stepped garden. So yeah, it's quite nice. There's lots of light coming in. And it's quite nice to be somewhere else for a week, like a little writing retreat, even though I'm not getting much writing done, but let's call it that. So tell me about your writing journey and how you got started. I got started writing, obviously I've always written. I was a print magazine journalist and then an online music journalist for about 15 years. And I stopped doing that when I got made redundant in 2013. At that point, I had been writing my first book, London Calling, for about 4 or 5 years. So I got a chunk of money and I did a bit of consultancy for the next 2 years. So part-time consulting work for music streaming services, because that's what I used to work in. And then I stopped doing that. But for 2 years, I was part-time. I released my first book in 2014 because I got made redundant, really. And so it gave me the time and the money to finish it. So that was a big leap for me because I decided that I didn't want to go back into full-time work. Not full-time work, sorry. I didn't want to be on somebody else's payroll full-time. So I took the part-time consultancy role. I wrote part-time. I learned a little bit about self-publishing after being rejected by one of the queer publishers in America. And then I just thought, you know what? I'm going to do it myself. Aided and abetted by lovely self-publishing authors who were ahead of me, Kiki Archer, Claire Ashton and Angela Peach. Those three in particular were a big help in persuading me to go self-publishing. And it's the best decision I've ever made because it meant that I was able to start my own business, be in control. And for a Virgo and control freak like me, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, so that was in 2013 that I got made redundant. I published my book in February 2014. I carried on part-time music consulting until 2016, and then I went full-time in 2016. And it has been a ride learning how to do business, learning how to write books at a consistent rate. It's one that I'm still enjoying to this day. Tell me about your latest book and the inspiration behind it. Well, my latest book is called Change of Heart, and it's a gorgeous romance with a lot of feels and a lot of drama. I can't really say too much about the plot because it might give it away, but suffice it to say that it is a fomance. So Erin has to go back to the Scottish Highlands for her parents' 40th wedding anniversary party, and she always goes back for Christmases and occasions single, because she's been single forever and she's still single. So she decides to hire a fake girlfriend just for the week of the party. Enter Steph Mitchell. Here she comes in all her gorgeousness. And, you know, it was just going to be for a week. But obviously they get along. They're a bit spiky at first, but then they start to get along and then they gel. But then secrets from the past rise up and threaten everything that they've built in that week. It's got all the feels. It's very heartwarming, heartbreaking a little bit. A lot of readers have said that they've shed a tear, but it has a happy ending and it is uplifting. And there are laughs along the way because, you know, I've always got to put laughs in my book because it's just who I am. But yeah, if you've read it, I hope you enjoyed it. And if you've yet to read it, I hope my very roundabout answer has inspired you to do so. What have been my highlights of 2021? Well, do you know what? This year has been really, really tricky personally because, as I say, my mum and dad are getting older and they need a lot more care. So I've been had to take time out to do that. And so I haven't worked as much as I expected to. Now, I was trying to pare down the amount of hours I was working this year just to work smarter, not longer. But in the end, I've had to take more time off because of my family. I suppose just seeing it through to the end of the year, really, sticking the course, that's a pretty good one. And that I have actually still managed to release three books. I'm really quite proud of that. So the three books I released was London Romance Series Book 7, Hot London Nights, and then also Book 8, Big London Dreams, which was my first historical lesbian romance. So I'm very proud of that too. And then I released Change of Heart, which I didn't know I started. Do you know what? I started about three different books this year. And I think probably it's the result of my scattered brain with all the different plates I'm spinning in the background. But they just didn't stick with me for some reason. So, but then I had the idea for Change of Heart after, and it was inspired by my holiday in the Scottish Highlands, which actually is number 5 on my highlights of 2021. So it was inspired by my holiday, and I came home and I wrote it in like 3 months. And I'm really proud of it. And I would say that all the books I've released this year, I'm super proud of. I think because I struggled so much to pin down the third book, and then when I pinned it down, I loved it. So I think it's different to anything else I've written. And I think Change of Heart is the best book I've ever written. Absolutely. Big London Dreams was the biggest challenge, I think, because it was set in the late 1950s. So I had to do a lot more research for it, and research when you're locked down, it's not as easy, but I managed to do it. And I'm really proud of that one as well. So, yeah. And also, as I said, the Scottish Highlands holiday, you know, from going to having to cancel our travel plans, then we decided that we were going to go for Scottish Highlands. And it turned out to be 2 weeks off that we both really needed, me and my wife, but also one of the best holidays we've had in years. Absolutely years. It was absolutely incredible. What's on the docket for 2022? I'm hoping to get 3 new books out. There'll definitely be book 9, the final book in the London Romance series. There's definitely going to be a Christmas book because I'm writing it now. And I've got the idea for my other book, The Standalone. So from actually a few weeks ago, not knowing, I keep sort of flip-flopping around like, yes, I know what I'm going to do, and then I keep changing it. But I think this is 80% set in stone. Let's go 80%. Apart from 3 new books, I'm also going to have more translations out. That was the other thing I was proud of. I forgot that bit. In 2021. So I've got 3 books out, 3 new audio books out. So that was Hot London Nights, Big London Dreams, and The Long Weekend, one from my back catalogue. So if you haven't listened to those, you're an audio lover, which I assume you are, you're listening to this podcast, do check them out. I also released 3 translations in 2021, which I'm super duper excited about, because it's been on my list for ages. You know those lists that you have in your head that you're like, yes, I must get around to that. And I was going to try and do one myself, like independently publish it. But actually, I had a couple of publishers approach me. So I've now got a German publisher and I've got a Brazilian Portuguese publisher. And in 2021, I had 2 new German translations come out. The German translations of A Taste of Love and Nothing to Lose. And also I had the Brazilian Portuguese translation of Before You Say I Do. Next year, I think that there will be 1 more German translation coming and 2 more Brazilian Portuguese. And hopefully 1 other as yet to be detailed and decided. So I'm excited for more translations and I'm very proud of the ones that came out in 2021. So 2022, more translations and more audio as well. So whatever I do in ebook and print, I would normally get put into audio. So that's going to be at least 2 more books. Do I put my Christmas books into audio? I don't know. Let me know what you think. I'm still umming and ahhing. What am I working on now and what can we expect in the future? Well, right now I'm writing next year's Christmas book. I know this is not very timely. Like, you know, it's not one that I'm just going to about to launch in January or February. But I'm just in the Christmas mood at the moment, and so I'm just going with the flow. So I'm really enjoying it. I'm about halfway through the first draft, so it's good. And the Christmas book is taking shape for next year, so there's definitely going to be one. When you're writing, do you have word counts? Now, this is an interesting one for me because I don't write every day. So some writers write every day. They just want to eke out some words, like even 100 words. For me, I write in spurts. So if I'm first drafting, as that's just getting the story out, I'll set myself quite high targets, say 4,000 or 5,000 words a day. So last week I wrote 30,000 words. This week hasn't been quite as productive because I'm not at home. But I will get, my plan is to get this one done by the end of the year. The first draft. Now, bear in mind the first draft is just the first stage. By the time my book gets published, I could have anywhere from between 5 to 9 drafts. So first draft is just the first stage. So when I'm writing first draft, I do write quickly and regularly. I write, you know, I would say probably 6 out of 7 days in the week. Probably give myself one day off. If I'm writing second draft, then I aim to do like 4 or 5 hours a day again. So yeah, it just depends. But then I can go, normally around the time of a launch, I might go a couple of months without writing any new words. It's just how I work. Different people works for different things. You have to find your process. What's my favourite thing about writing and my least favourite thing? So I would say there's a lot of favourite things and things that I didn't really realise when I started. So obviously, I love writing. I've always had this creative writing urge. And I remember when I was a journalist, I used to come home from work and then I used to sit down and try and write short stories. I'm terrible at writing short stories, so that was my main mistake. But I didn't think I could write novels then. So I just thought a short story would be easier. Ha! What did I know? Nothing. And I didn't know myself at that time or what I was capable of. I had limiting beliefs, but my belief system has been completely blown up in the last 6 or 7 years. That's something good, isn't it? Because I'm learning. I'm still learning and I'm still changing. And that is the key thing that you have to do in life, really. Change is inevitable and you have to roll with it. So what's my favourite thing? My favourite thing in this whole career, I suppose, is hearing from readers. I love hearing from readers and I love them telling me that my book has made a difference in their lives or entertained them or whatever. You know, I mean, I've heard from people who said that it's given them the courage to come out. And that is incredible. It really is incredible. I've heard from teenagers who've read my books who said that it's given them hope for the future. I mean, I can't tell you what all those emails mean. They really do spur me on. So, you know, I'd love it if writing lesbian romance was just writing lesbian romance, but it's still important and it's still a political act because there's still too much of the world where lesbian romance is seen as a bad thing. And how can lesbian romance be a bad thing? I don't get it. My brain does not compute. I love hearing from readers. I love the business of writing. So I didn't think I'd love being a small business person, but I do. I love being my own publisher. And I think I also now love the third edit. So I used to love writing the first draft. Now I get through that. And I used to hate editing. Now I love, love, love the third edit because that's where it really starts coming together, where I go back and shade in details and firm everything up and it starts looking like a book. The first draft is a mess, but everyone's first draft is a mess. What's the worst thing? Do you know what? I think it's that the stages of writing never change, even after 20 novels. I mean, what the fuck is that about? What I mean by that is that after the first draft, I think, oh, this is a mess, but I'll fix it in draft two. And then in draft two, I go through it and I'm like, oh my God, this is the worst. That's just the worst. I mean, there are some bits where I go, hey, not bad, but you know. And then I fix draft two and I firm it up as much as I can. And then I read it on my Kindle and I'm just like, what the fuck was I thinking? And I see, it's not until I fix everything in draft three that then normally things start to change and I think, hey, maybe this book has got a chance. But I hate that it's the same every time. I thought as I went on in my career, things might, you know, get easier. But no, good to know. What's the best piece of writing advice you've ever been given? The best piece is get it finished. Get it written. It's a superpower, you know, to finish projects. I had so many unfinished projects throughout my life, throughout my creative writing life, before I decided to publish lesbian romance novels. So many unfinished stories, and they're always open in your brain and they drain you. And also, even if you're not planning to publish anything, just finish the story and move on to the next one. And if you are planning to publish, you need to finish it to the best of your ability at that time and then let it go. And that is a superpower that you really need to learn. Have I learned anything about myself and my writing during lockdown? Yes, I've learned that I'm adaptable, I can work through crisis, and I can work anywhere. So They're good traits, right? I also learned that I miss coffee shops when they all closed. Final question. If I could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would I choose and why? This question has stumped so many people when I've asked it throughout my 73 episodes. But and it can mean anything to any, whatever you want it to mean. But really, it just means whose writing do you admire? Or whose personality do you admire? And I think I would have to go... I like chatty, laid-back, casual writing. But normally, chatty, laid-back, casual writing is very hard to achieve. And it looks easy, but it's not. Until you try it, you don't know. So I think Armistead Maupin, with his Tales of the City series, was a trailblazer for this in the 70s. So I'd like him to be my dad, and then I would have Judy Blume as my mum. Because Judy Blume as well, with all her YA books when I was growing up, was a lifeline, even though there was no queer characters in there. And I'm sure there maybe would be today, but it wasn't the done thing in the 70s and 80s. But Judy Blume spoke to me in a way that no other author ever had done. And then she went on to write a few adult books later on, like much later on in life. And they're fantastic and the characters in them are great. And she still runs a bookstore wherever she lives in America. So I couldn't love Judy more. Great parents they'd be, I think. Where can listeners find out more about me? You can keep up with everything I do, as I said, on my website, which is www.clairelydon.co.uk. And do go and sign up for my mailing list and do come and look at my book recommendations. And I'm still going to have my other podcast going every week. So if you want to still hear my voice piped into your ears, go over and subscribe to Lesbians Who Write on all the podcast apps on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I use an app called Podcatcher. And all now is left for me to do is say thank you so much for listening over the past 6 years. This podcast gave me the start in my podcasting career, and I couldn't be more grateful to Denise at the Lesbian Lounge for allowing me to come on here and do this podcast on her feed, and for giving me all the podcast tips and tricks and editing it for the longest time. So thank you, Denise, but mostly thank you to you for listening. And as I said, if you love hearing about writing and how I do it and what I'm up to, do come and listen to the Lesbians Who Write podcast. Also, if you want to know more about my books, I've written 20 of them. You can go to my website, www.clairelydon.co.uk, and all the links to buy are there. You can buy direct or at Apple, Google, Kobo, Kindle, Barnes & Noble, and a variety of other places where books are sold and streamed. And of course, I've also got audiobooks. I think I've got 11 of them at last count. If you listen to this podcast, you probably love them. So why not give them a whirl? But as a final sign-off, I thought I'd include a couple of chapters from my recently released audiobook, Big London Dreams. Until then, that's it from me. Thanks for listening. Have a great Christmas. Have a great New Year. Have a great 2022.
Big London Dreams, written by Claire Lydon, read by Claire Story. Chapter 1. Present Day. The door to the hotel conference room opened, and India Contelli walked in. Joan glanced up, then frowned. India seemed spooked. Joan had no idea what had happened to her since they'd last seen each other a couple of hours earlier, but whatever it was, it didn't suit her. Joan stood up, her attention for the first time since she'd arrived, not wholly focused on Eunice. "Are you okay?" India looked startled by the question. She put down her bag, her knuckles white around its handle. Her nod was far too vigorous for it to be genuine. "Absolutely. Just ran into an old flame and it's thrown me somewhat." India blinked, then exhaled, trying to shake off whatever it was bothering her. "Although who am I to talk? You two haven't seen each other for 60 years. She walked around the oval-shaped table and sat down opposite Joan and Eunice. "Are you sure? Because you look like you could do with a black coffee or perhaps something stronger." India's eyes were puffy, her makeup freshly reapplied. Her frame was tall, but her spirit sagged. She shook her head. That's kind of you, but I'll be fine. Today is all about you and your story. Then we'll let you go and it'll just be the two of you, I promise. She checked her watch. Give me, say, an hour of your time, and then we'll see how we're all feeling. Joan glanced at Eunice and they both nodded. India clasped her hands in her lap and beamed. Her professional face slipped back on, the one Joan knew from the TV. India took a deep breath before she spoke again. So, tell me, ladies, you haven't seen each other since 1959. You met and fell in love in 1958. We're now well into the 21st century, 60 years on. We have the internet, we have imminent space travel, we have smartphones. But what intrigued me was when you saw each other for the first time a few hours ago. You recognized each other right away. She turned to Joan. Tell me, have the years not changed Eunice at all? Joan glanced at her first love. How to adequately explain it? They have, of course. Neither one of us is Peter Pan. Her mind flew to the statue of J.M. Barrie's fictional boy, nestled by the long water in London's Kensington Gardens. She and Eunice used to meet there in the summer months and plan their future on the lush green grass. I was worried we might have nothing to say to each other, that I might not recognise her, that our politics would be at odds, that I would feel nothing. Her face creased into a smile, but the opposite was true. When I walked into the foyer of the Savoy and saw the back of her, I recognised her shape immediately. The very essence of her. It was instinct. When she turned, I wanted to embrace her. I wanted everything to be okay. I've no idea if it will be, but that was my thought. Eunice nodded as she spoke. I was about to go and hide in my room when Joan walked in. I've lain awake at night dreaming of this moment, but also dreading it. She paused. But then, when it happened, it was perfect, almost scripted. Just like one of the shows we used to love to watch, that Joan's brother Jimmy used to get us into for free. Eunice paused, her eyes flickering over Joan's face. I don't suppose Jimmy's still here. Joan shook her head. He's not. But his son is. What's more, Vincent is gay and still lives at our Southwark flat. Eunice's jaw dropped. How wonderful. I'd love to go back there. Joan's grin spread right across her face. It can be arranged for you, my love. At her own words, Joan jolted. She put a hand over her mouth, sat upright and drew in a breath. Are you okay? India asked. Eventually, Joan nodded. I am, but this is just strange. Her heart pounded in her chest. Sweat broke out on her top lip. I just called Eunice my love. It's how I always thought about her. She was always my love. That's never changed, and now, here she is. You're going to make me cry, India told Joan. You're not the only one, Eunice added. She picked up Joan's hand and gave it a gentle squeeze. Glitter lit up Joan's veins. She'd thought this sort of feeling was long gone, that it had left first with Eunice and then when Sandra, her wife, had died. But now here it was again. Eunice had flicked a switch. India's voice brought her back to the moment. But before we talk about how you're feeling now, which I promise we'll come back to, I'd love to know a little bit of history, India said. I've read your heartbreaking letters, Eunice, of course, but I'd love to know how you met, how you came to fall in love, and what happened that drove you apart. We can take our time because I know this will be emotional. She reached across the table and pulled over a box of tissues to within reach of the couple. Just know we can stop whenever you want. Take a break or get a drink. If you could cast your mind back to 1958 and tell us about the young lovers, that would be brilliant. We just need some meat on the bones of your story. Eunice cleared her throat. We already had this conversation upstairs. We might cry, because although it's a love story, it's also sad. But ultimately, we both had good lives, and we're both happy to be here. So we're going to tell our story because it needs to be heard. Joan took a deep breath before she spoke. We're going to tell it as a thank you for bringing us back together again. India dabbed her eye with a tissue. Look at me, I've already gone. She turned to Heidi, working the cameras and lights. Are you good to go? I'm rolling, so whenever you're ready. Joan nodded. Okay, then. Julie Andrews once sang that the beginning was a very good place to start. Shall we try that? That sounds perfect, India replied. Who wants to go first? Eunice sat up straight, holding on to her chunky beads. She pushed her royal blue glasses up her nose, looked into the camera, and then at Joan. I'll start, she said. Chapter 2, 1958. Eunice hurried down the cracked pavements of the White City estate, a maze of concrete blocks shivering in the March gloom. Naked trees rocked in the late afternoon breeze, and a group of younger boys played football in the internal grassed courtyard, their jumpers laid down as goalposts. One of the boys, Colin, took a shot that sailed just wide. The ball slammed into the orange front door of a ground floor flat, and the door rattled in its frame. A barrage of expletives filled the air. Don't let your mother hear you talk like that, Colin. She'll come and wash your mouth out with soap, Eunice told him as she walked past. In reply, Colin stuck out his tongue. Eunice laughed, shifted her faux leather brown bag up her arm, then turned right onto the external concrete stairs. She climbed the three floors to her family's flat, before deciding she couldn't quite face her mum after yet another failed date. She carried on up to the fourth and final floor. David was already there, leaning on the concrete wall that came up to his hip, staring at the boys playing below. David was her neighbour, and the only boy she'd ever really got on with. They'd known each other since they were babies, born a month apart. Eunice slotted her body against the wall next to him. David turned his head, then smiled. He took the woodbine from his lips. From the look of your face, I'm guessing the date did not go well. They discussed it the night before in this exact spot. It had been set up with one of her mum's friend's sons. Eunice snorted, then rolled her eyes. How do you know? The deep sigh. The look I know so well. The look I know well. David paused, pushing his already slicked back hair to one side. He wore turned-up jeans and a checkered shirt, but didn't seem cold, unlike Eunice, who still wore her thick winter coat. She hoped there was enough water for a hot bath when she got in. What was wrong with this one? Eunice frowned, trying to conjure the words without being too harsh. He had bad hair. David laughed, his grey eyes dancing as he did. Bad hair is new. The last one, you told me, had breath like a horse. The one before that was too short. He took a drag on his cigarette before he continued. You know, you can change physical attributes. It could get a new hairstyle or grow it. You could buy the other one some mouthwash. Next, you'll be telling me I could put the other one on a stretching rack. Nah, Mr. Shorty is a no-go. David's Cockney accent made her smile. Somehow Eunice had an accent her family thought of as posh. They had no idea where she came from. Often Eunice wondered how she wound up here too. David straightened and walked behind her. He put his hands on her shoulders, then began to knead them. Tense, he said. I'm guessing this fella today didn't make you relaxed, so I'll have a go. David dug his fingers into Eunice's tight muscles. Eunice leaned into his touch. If David ever tired of being a plumber, he could certainly work as a masseur. What was his name? Reggie. You could never go out with a Reggie. You'd always be thinking of our Reggie. David's older brother, Reggie, worked for the same plumbing firm he did. Did this Reggie always have food in his teeth too? David let go of Eunice and leaned his bum on the balcony wall, his back to the open air. Eunice glanced up at him. I don't know, we only met for coffee. That was enough. The coffee and cake were good, at least. She paused. And free. You women, leading us on, making us pay in more ways than one. She shook her head. I didn't want to lead him on. I wanted to like him. I wanted him to sweep me off my feet, but Reggie wouldn't know how to do that. He's a trainee electrician, but there was no spark. Fatal, David smirked. Eunice stood upright. She stretched her neck, then put her bag on the ground. David stuck his hands in his jeans pockets. The turnips were new, although David swore he wasn't a teddy boy. His gaze dropped to the floor before bouncing back up to Eunice. For what it's worth, he's an idiot. You look lovely. Eunice gulped. David had started to say this sort of thing more and more of late. She was never sure what to do with his compliments, so she ignored them. Still, they hung around afterwards like a persistent stone in her shoe. She leaned back over the balcony, as much to escape the heat of David's gaze as anything else. Do you think we'll meet someone eventually and get married? They were both 17 now. Both had been in full-time jobs for 2 years. David drew in a long breath. Isn't that the law? It's either that or become like my Uncle Billy. I don't fancy that. He just drinks cider all day. My mum says he may as well be dead. Eunice squeezed her toes in her shoes. The looming deadline had begun to make her feel uneasy. But don't you ever think you might want to do something different? Be somewhere different? Not really. I love London. That was the problem. Eunice wasn't happy with her lot, whereas David had been born content. But there are different places to live. If you moved out of London, you might be able to afford a house. A light bulb flicked on in her head. Imagine not living in a flat, having your own garden, not having to share a bedroom with your two sisters. David didn't take his eyes off her. So long as I have somewhere to live and someone to live with, that'll do me. He paused. Did you see those houses they're building by the river? They're massive. I bet they have more than one bathroom, maybe even heating in every room. Eunice glanced down the concrete-sided corridor balcony that ran the length of the block of flats. David's dad had described them as ocean liner style. He'd seen an ocean liner in real life, so he knew. However, Eunice was sure there was something more to life than concrete, that beyond this block of flats, even beyond White City and West London, something bigger and better was waiting for her. She wanted to see an ocean liner, even sail on one. She wanted to do something creative. She longed for a world of glamour. She wasn't going to get it living here. She turned back to David. I wake up at night burning with something. I don't know what it is, but I can feel it in my feet. They're itchy. They want to travel. She stroked an arm through the cool spring air. I want to see the world. I want to go to Europe, to America. I want film stars to be dressed in my clothes, my designs. My new job tomorrow is the start of my journey. David blinked. It wasn't the first time he'd heard this. And you'll do it all. He gave her an adoring smile. How's your dress coming along? Eunice had been working on a new design for the past few weeks. It's nearly ready. Now I just need a suitable date and dance to wear it to. The start of your journey. The world's not going to know what hit it. He tilted his head to the evening sky. Whereas I'll be a plumber with Reggie, and with any luck, some girl might have me. Eunice pressed herself next to him and threaded her arm through his. Any girl would be lucky to have you. If I come back from my travels single and you're still available, I'll pick you, David. He perked up at that, turning his face to her. I'll hold you to that, Eunice Humphreys. He paused. Or, as you might be, Eunice Cranks. I'm not changing my name for you. A feminist, too. David raised an eyebrow. Eunice smiled as she stared across the courtyard. The six boys were collecting up their jumpers and heading home for dinner. Mum says I have to marry rich, otherwise my life will be like hers. She spread her arms wide. But why does life have to be about who you marry? Can't it be about my career, the people I meet, the places I go? You've always been too good for the White City. Eunice caught his gaze. So have you. You're going to make someone a fabulous plumber. They're going to be in high demand with so many extra bathrooms everywhere. He smiled, showing off the gap in his front teeth. Maybe I'll make my fortune by staying here. Maybe you will. She put a thumb to her chest. But me, I'm getting out. I'm going to travel the world and make sure everyone knows my name. Whoever I marry will have to be okay with that. David gazed at her. Here's to a world beyond the White City. If anyone can conquer it, you can. Have you got everything ready? All set for tomorrow? Lay out your clothes, because otherwise you'll be fretting and your sisters will get narky with you for waking them up. Eunice's mum, Valerie, cracked another egg into the frying pan as she spoke. It was for her dad, who'd just got in from the pub. He'd missed dinner, which was standard practice. Grease coated the kitchen air. It grated on Eunice that her dad couldn't eat with everyone else, meaning only one clear-up. Her mum, though, never moaned. She had endless patience. She told Eunice it came with having six children. It's all done. Eunice leaned against the chrome sink and draining board. The handle of the mint-green kitchen drawer below dug into her bum, but she ignored it. My clothes are hung on the door. Now, I just hope Rose doesn't keep me awake all night with her snoring. Eunice shared a room with her younger sisters, Mabel and Rose. She at least had her own bed. The other two slept in bunks. Her mum twisted the thick knob on the cream cooker and lifted the frying pan. She slipped the fried eggs onto a plate that already had two slices of thickly buttered mother's pride, some chips and a slice of black pudding. The latter turned Eunice's stomach. She'd liked it until she was told what it actually was. Her 10-year-old brother, Graham, ran in, shooting imaginary bullets from his fingertips. Their dad was hot on his heels, chasing him with bullets of his own. His dark stubble contrasted with his flushed skin, and his braces sagged on top of his white shirt. The pair ran out of the kitchen, Graham squealing. Dad winked as he ran past. The smell of stale beer followed him out. "Your dinner's ready, Eddie," Mum shouted. Dad reappeared at the door out of breath. He licked his lips, then grabbed cutlery from the drawer, along with his plate. "I'll take it through to the other room. Leave you girls to chat." Eunice and her mum sat at their small, white formica table. It sat four comfortably, six at a push. Family dinners for eight always involved a couple of kids on stools balancing plates on their knees. "Do you want a cup of tea? I was going to put the kettle on." Eunice nodded, and her mum filled the shiny blue kettle, twisted a cooker knob, lit a match and set it to heat. In a few minutes the kettle would whistle, and her mum would marvel. Her dad had brought it home 2 weeks earlier, and the speed and noise were still a novelty. Up above, the suspended wooden drying rack held an assortment of the family's smalls. Mum dried bigger clothes in the designated drying room, but never underwear. Hence, Eunice's bras and pants always smelled of fried eggs. "Has Mrs. Higgins been again?" The telltale cake tin sat temptingly on the side, so Eunice already knew the answer. Beryl Higgins lived three doors along in their block of flats and seemed to spend her whole life baking. She was widowed, and her son had moved to America in search of a new, better life, so Mrs. Higgins' baking often ended up in their kitchen. She also had a sewing machine and space, so Eunice was often there using both. Her designs would be nowhere without Mrs. Higgins' help. She'd never create anything in their overcrowded flat. "This morning," her mum replied. She still wore her pink apron, and her tights had a snag on the right shin. "Brought over a sponge cake, a batch of ginger snaps and some shortbread. I don't know how she coped in the war when there was rationing. She'd barely been able to bake a cake a week. I suspect she blocks it out, a distant memory." Her mum reached over. "Are you excited about tomorrow?" Eunice nodded. "I am." It might not be Paris, but it was a job as a machinist in a respected garment factory in the West End. It meant she was going to be in the heart of London's rag trade. Far better than the small fry factory she'd been at for the past 2 years in Hammersmith. "Then I'm excited for you." Her mum patted her arm. "I know you want to do it your way. You wouldn't take my advice and get a nice office job. So it's good you took a step up to a bigger factory with bigger wages. You've worked hard, and who knows where this might lead. You'll meet new friends, and you might even meet the man you're going to marry." Eunice rolled her eyes. Her mum thought an office job and snagging a good husband was the be-all and end-all. Eunice found the thought terrifying. "I'm not there to meet a husband. I'm there to learn new skills. Besides, I haven't met many men who can sew lately." Her mum leaned forward. "They might be the supervisors. Maybe even the boss's son." "What have I always said? Meet a man who can provide. It makes all the difference in life." She scanned the chipped kitchen cabinets, the grease-stained walls. "Tomorrow might be the day you meet someone who really matters. So, keep a smile on your face and keep your hair nice, just in case. You never know who might be round the corner."